Can't do it? All right, I'll make do with what we got. So let's pray. Lord, I ask that you would use me tonight, that you would take words that I speak and give us some real understanding and knowledge of especially the commandment on thou shalt not covet. And so I ask that you just use me in Jesus' name. Amen. This evening's study is really about Exodus chapter 20, verse 17. I'm going to read it. I'm also going to include in this, thou shalt not steal, which is Exodus 20, 15, but we're not going to finish that tonight, so we're going to go with coveting first, which is the last of the Ten Commandments. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his manservant or his maidservant or his ox or his ass or anything that is your neighbor's, which probably they could have just said, you shall not covet anything that is your neighbor's at the end. But God wanted to be verbal, so he gave us the whole thing. And he covered a number of things, and then he said, hey, anything that is your neighbor's. 20:15 is, you shall not steal, just four words. Now, in this commandment on coveting, we're going to probably cover some of thou shalt not steal, but I will go into some of the aspects of theft next week if I don't get to it tonight. First off, I want to realign you with the Ten Commandments. The first four have to do with how we love God, our relationship with God. That no other gods before me, no graven images, you shall not take his name in vain, and to honor the Sabbath or remember the Sabbath. Those have to do with our relationship with God, and they actually match up with the great commandment that Jesus said in Luke chapter 25, or chapter 10, verses 25 to 28, when he said, you shall love the Lord your God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And those four things are actually covered in those first four commandments. And that has to do with our relationship with God. It has to do with how we act, how we talk, and what we think about in terms of our lives. The next six is our duty towards man, or our relationships with man. And they are do's and don'ts in there in terms of these things. You know, we have covered you shall not kill and its various aspects in terms of that. We talked about adultery last week. We talked about bearing false witness, which really has to do with a lot of the stuff you hear on TV now. And what happens because of that? And how things are really ruined in this life because of that. And we've also looked at the adultery one too. So we've covered all of these except for thou shalt not steal, you shall not covet. First off, I take tours in people's lives and I can read. And I know this, we all fall short of the glory of God. We are all sinners in the sight of God and in need of his forgiveness. And these Ten Commandments really cover the gamut in terms of how we are to live, in terms of our attitudes toward one another, our actions, and also our attitude towards God. And we have to choose whether or not we're going to live by God's ways of dealing with our lives or not. We choose to do this. We stand condemned by these commandments as well because we all fall short. This last commandment here has to do with order in terms of our lives. It affects the way we act. And when I read it to you, you'll notice in here it says, house, wife, that could be husband as well, servants, ox, ass, livestock, beasts of burden, just basically everything in there, and then it just says all of it, which pretty much by definition, covers it. What we can covet. Now, the word covet actually means this: to desire that which is another's. Okay? This has to do with where you are looking in terms of your life. This has to do with your desires in terms of life. By definition, though, it is to desire that which is another's. And it brings into play things like what you crave or what you envy or what you're jealous of or what you lust after or avarice, which is kind of like Scrooge. Avarice, which is that real grasping of money. Where are you looking with your life? Where are you not satisfied with your life? This has to do with where you're not satisfied. Now, coveting has to do with those things that are aimed at what belongs to somebody else. It's kind of like adultery is not about fornication. It's not just about sex. Adultery has to do with breaking faith with your spouse or with someone, or with, in terms of God, he looked at it in terms of our hearts, and he says, when we go after other gods, which is the first commandment, you shall have no other gods. Well, in this commandment, coveting has to do with going after somebody else's stuff. It's the same way that adultery is not just about sex. And sex is not always adultery. Coveting, desiring things, is not always coveting. We all have desires in terms of things. Now, in James chapter 4, and we've looked at this before, but it says this. What causes wars? And what causes fightings among you? By the way, there are little wars that take place all around us, and some of you may be involved in some of these wars that are out there right now. It doesn't have to just do with nations. He says, is it not your passions that are at war in your members? You desire, do not have, so you kill, one of the commandments, and you covet and cannot obtain. And so you fight and wage war. What you do, when he says covet here, he says you're going after somebody else's wife, husband, stuff, money, whatever. And so you fight and wage war. That's what happens. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly. And this has to do with how you ask about something. It has to do with not the question. It has to do with the heart, how you'd ask. And so he brings all these up, kill, steal, destroy, false witness, adultery, all of them come under this category of coveting in a way. Because coveting is the thing that drives people to kill, steal, destroy, false witness, adultery. And that is evil. That is true evil. That is what Satan does in terms of things, and that is what we do in terms of our lives as well. This is the last of the Ten Commandments. And it is last because it speaks to the other five that have to do with our relationships with people. It's kind of like the first commandment really has to do with what the other three commandments have to do with our relationship with God. So you have, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not covet somebody else's stuff. It speaks to the causes that cause us to kill, steal, and bear false witness and all these things. As well as the first one speaks to the things about God. If you have no other gods before me, you're not going to make something else your God in terms of this life. You're going to give me the time to put into my relationship with you, which has to do with the Sabbath, and you're not going to stand up there and basically say that I can't do anything. That's what taking his name in vain is. Oh, God can't help me in this. He may help you, but he can't help me. That's taking his name in vain. And so he speaks about this thing. Now, coveting is what Dwight L. Moody called the unconfessed sin, because we don't want to talk about it. This has to do coveting. This is rampant in our lives. So you just might as well get used to it. And you need, the focus is really on yourself. How do I conduct myself in this life? And how do I look at life in terms of this? Coveting has to do with like social stratus. You know, one of the things that I hear from all these politicians and everything, especially the Democratic side, and if you're Democratic, I'm sorry, but there is this class warfare thing that goes on. Do you know what that is? That has to do with the sin of coveting. That's what it does. That's where you're looking on somebody else's stuff and you say, I want that stuff. But it doesn't have to just be that. It could be somebody else's talent. Somebody may be better than you, because there's always the faster gun, you know that? Doesn't matter what profession you're in or what you do with your life, there's always a faster gun. There's always somebody prettier than you are, girls, and all that goes with that kind of stuff. And there, one of the things that we deal with is we deal with these things. Somebody's better than we are in some place. Could be talent, could be intelligence, could be their drive, could be this, what, how, their luck in this life. Could have to do with their maturity in terms of things. And so what we do is we lust after. We covet. And what does that do to you when you turn your eyes away from what you have and you start looking on other people's stuff and you know, all the things that are mentioned in the commandment? What does it do to you? Well, here's what it does. It damages you. And it gets a hold of you, and it begins to drive you. And guess what? It becomes your God that you go after in terms of how this works. So this is what coveting has to do with looking at other people's where they are. Could be status, could be pretty, could be intelligence, could be all kinds, job position, could be all kinds of things. This obstetrician and a minister were brothers, and the minister, he said, he came up with his brother, and they get together Thanksgiving and things like that. He says, I just don't understand. I don't get it. He says, you know, you have the same education I have. I have got a master's degree and a doctorate degree in ministerial things, and you've got a doctorate, and you're an obstetrician. I just don't get it. We have the same education. We're pretty close in terms of intelligence, but I'm a great speaker. He says, I make $50,000, and you make $250,000. I don't get it. And the obstetrician brother says, it's all in the delivery. Just so you know. But there's this relationship and value, and it's looking at somebody else's stuff or a thing. Coveting is the opposite of contentment. It also has to do with youthful passion. Now, any of you guys and gals out there that are 40 and under, you need to pay attention. Because some of us have grown old in our day, and the youthful passions kind of die down. Although I hear that there are places where old people gathering down in Florida, and they got a rash of sexually transmitted diseases going on down there, so I don't know about all that stuff. But anyway, what I know is, it's true though. But you, look it up. I'm a student of what's going on out there. Youthful passions, though, Youthful passions have to do with the drives and the desires that we have in our lives. And what those youthful passions do to us, they will warp our viewpoint on life because they become our lens. And the younger you are, the more you got in terms of vitality, you might say, in terms of strength and everything that goes with it. And when you got your eyes, whatever your lens is on, that will lead you to resentment or envy or jealousy or any of the other things in terms of how it drives you in terms of your life. It will warp your viewpoint in terms of life. And that, so the question really has to do with this. Where are you looking? And you have to ask yourself that question, because this is really not about church or anything like that. This has to do with your daily life, and where are you looking? What's your viewpoint on life? What is your lens? What's driving you in terms of life? But it really has to do with looking. You know, it can go, where are you looking? And why are you looking there? That's the other question that goes with it. Now, this could be in terms of your profession. This could be in terms of your job place. It could be your spouse or maybe one of the opposite sex. It really, what I'm really raising up to you is, where are you looking? You have to examine your own life. Because in 1 John, he describes it pretty good, and we're going to get, I think it's 2:15 in the first letter of John. There's three things: the lust of the flesh, well, that's youthful passions, folks. The lust of the eyes, that is also youthful passions. The lust of the eyes has to do with when you start looking around, and you're not content where you are, and you begin to desire something else. And that's where you have to look at it, and you have to ask yourself those questions. And the other one is the pride of life, and that has to do with, oh, this status thing or in terms of how you are. Where does your heart lie, and how does it affect your vision of life? Most wars, most crime, most bad blood in families comes from these things. Coveting. Now, when the youthful passions begin to die, you just don't have the energy anymore. Like, you don't have the energy to get up out of that lazy boy and shoot your neighbor anymore. I said, well, I'm not going to shoot him today because I just don't want to get up. But you have resentment, you know, and you have resentment of neighbors. Oh, sisters or brothers or cousins or parents or, oh, somebody who is more successful than you are in your profession, somebody who is superior to you in terms of your intellect or in terms of your beauty in life or whatever, you know, and it could have to do with your fortune in life. You know, how come he's got so much and I don't? What did he do? Or your popularity. And this goes, high school, do you remember high school? Do you remember high school? Oh, popularity contests all over the place, all the time, ever ad infinitum, ad nauseum. Intellectual, physical abilities and stuff like that. Now, one of the things that happens when you do this, when you begin to covet, you are not content where you are and you are looking around and you're desiring other people's stuff, place, or whatever in life, you are also denying God's providence in your own life. God is the one who created you, and he created you in your particular uniqueness. And at some point in time, you have to realize this and receive this as this is your gift in life, whatever that is. But a lot of times we're denying God's providence. We say, well, I'm going to try and fix what he got me into, basically, and we deny his understanding, destiny, will for our lives in terms of what we are. And what we begin to do at that point in time, we begin to put our premium on things and stuff instead of any relationship we have with God, and instead of having a principle of how we're supposed to treat people, we begin to think about things and stuff, and we look at that and envy. And then also self-pity can kick into gear in terms of this stuff. This is coveting. What I've described to you is coveting, and it's all around us all the time. It's in the workplace. It's in our families. It's in the politics of this country and the world situation as it is. Somebody's always going after somebody else's stuff or place in life or whatever, and it's always there. And God says, don't covet. Now, I can't take care of you. You can't take care of your neighbor. The only person that you can take care of in terms of this, it has to do with your own personal understanding of life and your lens in terms of, well, this is what he's given to me. Now, I can work at everything, but do I really want to be the one to steal this guy that I work with's position? Do I really want to get involved with another man's wife or husband? Do I really want to do this? Does God want me to clean up my act? This has to do with you, not me. I'm not your judge, never have been your judge. God is your judge, and he's the one that talks to all of us, okay? We choose to listen or we choose not to. It's that simple. Now, what I'm going to do to you tonight is I'm going to show you a few pictures of how this particular commandment enters into our life situations. And I have to look in the Old Testament to show you things. Now, I've done studies on Saul, and I've done studies on David, and so I'm not going to do a big study here on this stuff, but I want you to know that what you're seeing is people who are going against the commandment of God in terms of thou shalt not covet, and they end up stealing, killing, and doing all kinds of things. And the first one I want to look at is 1 Samuel chapter 18. And it is part of the story of Saul and David. Now, if you don't know the story of Saul and David, you can read about it in 1 Samuel. But here's what happens. Saul decided to usurp God's place in terms of his life, and he decided to live according to and run the nation according to his plan and everything. And basically, God said, I'm done with you, Saul. I'll find a king, another person to be king after my own heart. So he goes out there and Samuel picks David. Now, that's one thing. But in 1 Samuel 18, verses 7 and 9, this is right after David kills Goliath, okay, and makes a name for himself. And verse 6, as they were coming home, when David returned from slaying the Philistine, the women came out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with timbrels, with songs of joy, and with instruments of music. And the women sang to one another, and they made merry. Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very angry. And the saying displeased him, and he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands. And what more can he have but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day on. Now, Saul began to resent David because he coveted David's popularity. In reality, that's what's going on here. He resented David and he coveted his popularity. So he was basically going against the Ten Commandments here. So Saul, in his resentment, he is telling us a few things about himself. He is insecure in himself. He did not rest in God in terms of his place in life and all that that meant. And there, he was looking away from where he was, and he was looking at David, and hate and envy and jealousy began to come up in him because he coveted David's popularity. This is where the palace politics happens here. This happens in businesses. This happens in the job place where somebody may be doing a better job than the person on top, and there becomes envy and jealousy. And what is it? They're coveting the popularity of the other person because the other person is outshining them. Now, one thing about Saul and David here you need to remember is they have not read this book. They don't know what's going to happen. They don't know things about this. And by the way, you and I haven't read our book, have we? And so we are very much capable of falling prey to this particular commandment's temptations. And I'm not, you know, I try to make it perfectly clear. I'm not really talking about church here. I'm just talking about your relationship with God and what these Ten Commandments mean. Once again, if God has no authority in your life and the Bible has no authority in your life, there's no point in me talking to you about this stuff because you don't accept its authority. But if you do accept its authority, this should affect how you see the world and how you act and what you talk about, what you think about, etc., etc. So here we have Saul, the king, the head of the company, notices that this guy's doing a better job than he is, or at least they're ascribing to him a better job. Actually, whether or not David kills 10,000 or more does not make any difference. What he did was he killed Goliath, and that's where his popularity began to happen. Okay? Now, Saul, rather than saying, you know, I need to pay attention to this guy, he might be the guy that's supposed to replace me, and I may need to bring him along in terms of this. Rather than do that, he started hating him, and he eyed him from that day on. Second one is 2 Samuel chapter 15, and this has to do with David and his son Absalom. And this is another one where coveting is the actual driving force, okay? Absalom wants to overthrow his father. After this, Absalom got himself a chariot and horses and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom used to rise early and stand beside the way of the gate. And when any man had a suit to come before the king for judgment, Absalom would call to him and say, "From what city are you?" And when he said, "Your servant is such and such a tribe in Israel," Absalom would say to him, "See, your claims are good and right, but there is no man deputed by the king to hear you." Nobody who is deputized, basically, to hear your case. Absalom said, "Moreover, oh, that I were judge in the land. Then every man with a suit or cause might come to me, and I would give him justice." And basically he says, "Hey, if I were king, I'd take care of you." And whenever a man came near to do obeisance or would just bow down to him, he would put out his hand and take hold of him and kiss him. And thus Absalom did to all of Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And at the end of 4 years, Absalom said to the king, "Pray me, let me go and pay my vow, which I vowed to the Lord in Hebron." Now, what is going on here is Absalom covets his father's position as king. And I know this. I have been taking tours in people's lives for a long time. And I know this, that when there are kids in families who covet their parents' inheritance, it is the same thing that's going on here. Because that's really what is happening. He covets his father's inheritance of the kingship before he's dead. And so he plots to overthrow his father. By the way, I've seen versions of this in families. I've seen versions of this in businesses. I've seen versions of this in churches. And what has he got going on here is that rebellion and to temporarily his goal is to overthrow David. Conspiracy is in the heart of Absalom to usurp the throne. Now, Absalom could be the story that might be entitled The Kingdom That Never Was, because he is actually the firstborn of David. He would be the one to become king in the right time. But he chooses to take God out of the equation and to do it his way. And he wanted what he wanted, and he allows bitterness, resentment, and hatred, and vengeance, and envy, and all this stuff to build up in him. And what he is doing is pure evil. That's what's going on here. And that's just an Old Testament story. But everything's changed, but nothing's different. And everything's different, but nothing's changed. And this still goes on in these days, and it is wise to be aware that we are still a BC people out there, and this is the way things work. Now, in chapter 18, verses 31, we hear the end of this story, which is this. And behold, the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, "Good tidings for my lord the king." He's talking to David. "For the Lord has delivered you this day from the power of all who rose up against you." And the king said to the Cushite, "Is it well with the young man Absalom?" And the Cushite answered, "May the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up against you for evil be like that young man." And what happened was Absalom got caught. He had long hair. This is a good reason to get your hair cut. He had long hair, and he got ran under a tree on a horse, got his hair caught in the thing, and he got hung up in the tree, and some of David's men came along and just killed him. And they took care of that. And that's how that ended in terms of that. But that is a picture of this particular commandment. You see, we don't think about these commandments being for today, but they are, because I've seen coveting going on all my life around me. And dare I say it, I'm probably one who has also fallen prey to this particular commandment at times. And I won't ask for hands, but I know how this stuff works. Another one has to do with 2 Samuel chapter 11. And this has to do with David, who is a man after God's own heart. We did a study on it. And Uriah and Bathsheba. And I want to read to you from chapter 11, just to sum up. In the spring of the year, the time when kings go forth to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him, and all Israel, and they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained at Jerusalem. It happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch and was walking upon the roof of the king's house that he saw from the roof a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful. And David sent and inquired about the woman. One said, "Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" So David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her. Now she was purifying herself from her uncleanness. Then she returned to her house, and the woman conceived, and she sent and told David, "I am with child." Now, this is the story of David and Bathsheba, which is the part where he commits adultery and she commits adultery. But what is driving him is he is coveting another man's wife. Now, this is the man of God, folks. He's the man after God's own heart. And basically, he is also in midlife at this point in time. And he is going against this commandment, covet. And this is evil that is driving him. Now, you might say this is the sex drive that's driving him, but I'm going to tell you something about the sex drive right now, is it's not always about sex. That may be a manifestation of it, but it's not about sex per se. It's about power and desires and all that. Now, one thing I know about David, and you say, well, you know, he's a man. Well, he's a man. He's not short on sex, girls, guys. He's not short. If you read chapter 5, verse 13, I can tell you why he's not short. And David took more concubines and wives from Jerusalem after he came from Hebron, and more sons and daughters were born to David. In other words, this is not his issue. He's not starving from lack of sex. Got it? You need to keep this in mind here, because that's not the real issue here. David has had a success story going on for about 15, 20 years. And by the way, he's in midlife at this time. Now, I'll describe midlife to you. Men, this is the ages between 35 and 50-ish. If you get past that, you're not midlife anymore. But that's what's described as midlife. And he's a man. His success story is beginning to go sour at this point. He says, and that makes him vulnerable. You know what it says here? In the spring of the year, when kings go out to war, well, David is hunkering down, playing golf, and doing all other things. He's not taking care of the business of his life, which is the kingdom, basically. He's not taking care of that. And because he's idle, you might say, and he's got leisure time on his own, and he's not taking care of his business, probably his money issues, or power, or position. He's letting all these other guys run his business for him. Here's what happens to you. And this is, I'm going to say this to the men especially. Between these ages of 35 and 50, this is when midlife hits. One of the things that you discover at this point or come into is you don't need God. In fact, we begin to think we are God. Now, we won't say that to anybody, but that's where we come down in terms of how we think about life, and that's what happens. And when that midlife really starts rolling on us, we think we are God. And by the way, that is pride, because that is actually what Satan was saying too. He says, I don't have to go by God's rules anymore. That's open rebellion. I'll make my own rules. And that's what we do as men. And David is in that category right there between 35 and 50. He's had a pretty good success story in terms of taking care of his kingdom, his business, and everything that goes with it. And so he's taken a year off, basically. And idle hands and mind are the devil's workshop. And the lust of the eyes, that's what we look at. Men are visual, are we not, guys? And God becomes not real. And we, it's not that we don't believe there is a God. We have a bad memory. It's almost like, oh, my God. You know, and guys see. Right? Right? You ladies really don't understand that part of the male work, as we don't understand some of the female stuff that goes on. And I know that. He's visual. I don't see any boy magazines much. You would see girly magazines. Now, of course, that's become old hat now. We got Google and everything else now, but you don't see that. For every male strip joint, there's probably 100 female strip joints, right? Are you out there? You know, I am telling you the truth. This is the way we are, men. We're visual. So Bathsheba is on the penthouse next door, that penthouse apartment that Uriah has. And what about her? Is this all about David coveting? No, I don't think so, because she knows the palace is right next door. And so she gets out on the roof, and she knows that David did not go off to take care of his business in the kingdom, and so she decides to take a bath out there on the roof naked. And she knows she's a looker. She knows. You women know these things. I know how you'd think, at least somewhat. So I'm going to tell you this. She also covets the king's house. Now, the thing about hers is she's passive in this because men are aggressive in this. And to covet means just to take somebody else's wife, husband, stuff, field, place, wealth, whatever. And it's the sleeping beast, folks. Youthful passions. And now, it's not really her fault. She lusts after the king, but she is the non-aggressive one. He's the king. He's the one who is responsible for this. Now, what you women want, and this is just psychological understanding. Do you know what you gals really want when it comes to men? You want security that comes from a male person who is, you know, hunter-gatherer type. And it's in the genes of us. It really is. So you don't need to deny this stuff. It's there. The other thing, though, is that women, whether you know it or not, and I've seen stuff on the Science Channel and everything else, you're looking for a good gene pool. Hey, he may provide me with good children. And it would be better than Uriah because Uriah's not the king. And now, does she actually think about this stuff? Probably not too much. It's just built into us. And so this is where it comes. But what it is this 10th commandment kicks in. And it can be, this is the sleeping beast in all of us, by the way. And I know this. Sometimes it's about sex. Sometimes it's about ambition. Sometimes it's about revenge. Sometimes it's about fame or power. Sometimes it's about greed or money. And who knows? You know, at that moment, though, when this stuff kicks in, God is unreal. He becomes a myth to us. We no longer look to Him. We have our eyes on something else. This is what coveting is. Now, I have had golden retrievers all my life, and most all of them are pretty smart dogs. I had one or two dumb ones, but I remember Micah. Now, the one I got right now is much more of an obedient dog than Micah was an obedient dog. But one of the things that I used to do, I don't do it anymore, but I would carry a BB gun with me. And when they were little puppies, and I told them they do something, they didn't do it, I'd give them a little pop and back in. Buddy, that gets their attention. Oh, what a terrible pastor I am. What a bad person. Well, let me tell you something. After you do that for about a month or so, the dog figures it out. He says, hey, he's got the gun. I'm not going to get out alive. And so all I would ever have to do in the last 5 years of his life or so, but just shake it. And he'd hear the BBs. And he'd toe the line where he was supposed to be. Now you can think of it. My daughter, she says, oh, that's so cruel. You need to give him positive reinforcement. I said, I am. This is positive reinforcement. He's positive he's going to get shot if he doesn't get straightened up. But what I know about that dog is that he would toe the line. He would come with me and he'd stay with me and everything until a rabbit crossed his path. And then that gun was unreal. And he would go like a shot after that rabbit. And there is nothing I could do. I could shoot him a half dozen times and it would not slow him down if I could hit him. Because his mind is on the desire. One of the things that happens to us and to people is that when this coveting sin kicks in on us and we go against this commandment and we do it, God becomes unreal. And I know that's the case. The only reality is what you've got your eyes on. Now, men, it might be a physical conquest in terms of youthful passions and all that goes with that. For you women, it might have to do with your security or a good gene pool. It's not hatred of God. It's just that God becomes unreal to you, and he is just a bad memory, and we forsake the disciplines of life that we are called to. For David, he was coveting. That's the commandment he was breaking. And it not only ended up in adultery because he was having sex with another man's wife and she was doing the same. It wasn't just adultery. He had the whole government killed him, Uriah. He stole this man's wife. So it just, all these things started happening. And there are several commandments that end up being, and they all have to do with people, but he forgot about God in all this. God still had the BB gun, though. And if you read the story, there are consequences to your actions. So I guess watch what you look at. Avoid looking at other people's kingdoms. And guard your heart in all this. One more story. How am I doing? Good. Genesis chapter 4. These are all pictures of people who have covet something. And you need to know this truth. We're all in this together and we can do it. Genesis chapter 4, verses 1 to 8. This has to do with Cain and Abel. And we've heard the story. And we know what the sin was. But what drives this is this 10th commandment here. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And again she bore his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep and Cain a tiller of the ground. And in the course of time Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground. And Abel brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So Cain was very angry and his countenance fell, And the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Now, this is God talking to Cain. When God asks you a question, you're not looking for information. Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? He doesn't wait for an answer, by the way. If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is couching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must master it. Cain said to Abel, his brother, let us go out to the field. And when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Okay. This is another case in the Old Testament, and it really represents two different things. It represents the ways of man and the ways of God. That's really the difference here. That's the drawing line in terms of this thing. Now, you'll notice here that Abel's offering was received and Cain's wasn't. What is the difference there? Well, Abel sacrificed animals. And when God covered Adam and Eve, he sacrificed animals to cover them. In the story of Adam and Eve, what was cursed? Anybody remember? The ground was cursed. So what is Cain's offering comes from the curse, the ground's curse. And God didn't receive Cain's worship because it was from the ground. In other words, Cain did not offer appropriate worship. By the way, appropriate worship was dictated by God, and it is not up to the rationalizations of man. And you need to hear me on this. Redemption comes through the blood, not the ground. In the Christian faith, in the Jewish faith, redemption comes from the blood, not the ground. And there needs to be a sacrifice to cover the sins of the world, to cover your sins and mine. Now, some of us would rise up and say, you know, I don't get it. God is a terrible person that he would condemn Cain for this because his worship isn't appropriate. Well, who the heck is he to tell us what kind of worship is appropriate or not? We'll worship in our way if we want to. Well, here's part of this. This is not a democracy. Kingdom living is not a democracy. You don't juggle God's ways with human innovation. Now, I'm sorry, but there's some things that are radically important in terms of our faith and in terms of our worship and things like that. Redemption comes through the blood, and Cain did not offer blood in terms of his worship. He offered the cursed ground. But I know that some people will say, well, you know, I can worship God when I'm out there and I'm in that stand getting ready to hunt down these deer and I just worship that way. Or I can worship in the golf course, or I can worship when I go fishing out there, and et cetera, et cetera. And we'll just all say, come in, and we'll say, okay, well, I can honor God in all this. Well, I'm here to tell you, that's not appropriate worship. I didn't make the rules. God made the rules. And he told us that we come together, we assemble with one another in worship on occasion. And he gives us the lines to keep us where we need to be. But the rationalizations of man and human innovation, well, we make up our own rules as we go along, and Cain did the same thing. He made up his own rules. Oh, I'll give him a few bushels of corn over here, and we'll get this taken care of. So that's what was going on here. And so God says, no, but I accept his because his is appropriate. And God and Abel are in relationship. And what is it that Cain resents? Well, he covets the relationship that Abel has with God. Not realizing that it's his own rationalization that has driven that wedge between him and his relationship with God. But that's what he's coveting, and so he attacks the holy person. By the way, he's mad because God's answer is not his answer. Let me tell you the truth. This is the truth. I've been doing this for 48 years, and people do this to preachers all the time. Because one of the things, whether they know me or not, I represent God, and so I'm one of the holy people, whatever that means in terms of how you look at it. I know what it means, but so guess what? If you don't like God's ways of doing things, and you have your own rationalizations about this, guess who becomes the target? I do, because I'm closer, and so they go, if they can't kill God, they're going to kill me. And let me tell you, it's truth. It happens. It has happened to me a number of times, because if I actually do speak God's word to somebody and they don't like it, guess what? If they got a 45, they might just use it on me if it was legal. Doesn't matter, see, it's the rationalization. And they get mad because of God's anger. Man is jealous and envious of God, you might say. And you know why we're envious of God? It's because we want to take God's place. We know better than God. We've got it all figured out. We're going to do it our way. And we covet God's place in life. We want to be God. And that's that commandment again. Sin is at the door is what God said. He said, here's the warning. It's right at the door, and you've got to master it yourself. By the way, you notice that. He says, you have to master it. Cain didn't get it done. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, etc., etc. Okay, we're coming up on 7 o'clock. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to pause here. We will finish this off. I got one more story in the Old Testament. We're also going to talk about thou shalt not steal next week, because that's the other commandment. But it also, by the way, it just comes out of coveting is where it comes from. But coveting is, once again, the difference between coveting and some of these others is that in coveting, you are attempting to take somebody else's stuff. Kind of like adultery is when you break relationship with your spouse or some other person breaks relationship with their spouse. If you're just having sex, it's called fornication, and it's not the same. So we're looking at it from that standpoint. So coveting has to do with somebody else's business, field of interest, spouse, stuff, whatever. Okay? And we will finish coveting. And we'll also look at stealing next week. So let's pray. Lord, I ask that you would take whatever is worthy of your name and that you would work it into our lives, because this really is about not so much us looking at other people, although we can, but it's really about how we live our lives, what we look at, and how our attitudes are in terms of this life. So I ask that you would help us all to be your people in the way we live out our journey here in this world. In Jesus' name, amen.